get the characteristic polynomial of an endomorphism, and we'd more or less outline the argument that last time we discussed characteristic polynomial an endomorphism. So this was given F in end A we found a polynomial maybe we'll denote P sub F of T in Z bracket T which is monic and with the property that and actually the characteristic property that firstly the degree of F is P sub F of 0 and I wrote this in a different way last time namely that it's the determinant of T sub L of F and here L is any prime not equal to the characteristic and A is an abelian variety defined over F. T sub L is the Allardic Tate module and T sub L of F is the endomorphism of the Tate module induced by F and there was that relation and moreover the degree of n times the identity endomorphism minus f is the value of the polynomial at n. So I'm off, if I write it like this then I may be off here by a sign I guess. So plus or minus. And in particular f satisfies its own characteristic polynomial so p sub f of f is 0 okay so we have we had this argument last time some details to be fixed even in that argument but we're going to have to go a little bit lightly over proofs because otherwise we're not going to get anywhere by the end of the term. So there are things that you will have to, if you're interested, think more about and fill in some details. Okay, so now I want to apply this to a particular endomorphism that will exist whenever A is defined over a finite field. So suppose now, that F is a finite field. Actually, it exists in more generality, but this is our main context that we'll be looking at. So A is defined over a finite field, and here I have, of course, as I told you before, I have F bar is an algebraic closure. Of F, and this is a topological cyclic extension. This Galois group G F is generated by Galois F bar over F is a topologically cyclic. That means that there is an element. Such that the closure of the subgroup that it generates is the whole group, generates the group topologically. And the generator is, a topological generator is Frobenius, is given by F bar to F bar. which sends x to the q, where q is the number of elements in F. So this is what we'll call Frobenius. So that automorphism generates an infinite group, an infinite cyclic group, but as I say, it is dense in the whole Galois group. So everything in Galois, or another way of saying it is, given the topology on the Galois group, it's a profinite topology, so another way of saying it is that at any finite layer, the Galois group is generated as a group by Frobenius. Okay, so this Galois group itself is z hat, which is the inverse limit of all z mod n z. So for each integer n, there is a unique extension. Once you fix f bar, there is a unique extension of degree n, this Galois group z mod n z, and f bar itself is the union of all those subfields. Another way of writing this is the product over all times L of ZL. So this is a huge group. But anyway, since we have this Frobenius automorphism and A is defined over F, Frob induces a morphism, actually first a map, on A of F bar to A of F bar. Because naively, if you want to think of it, the point here in some coordinates is given by some tuple with each entry in F bar, so you can apply Frob to each of those. And the fact that you'll get another point on A is because the A is defined by equations whose coefficients are in F, and F is not changed when you apply Frobenius, right? Clearly, because this map is the identity on F itself. It is an element of Galois F bar over F. Okay, so this induces a map like this, and in fact, it is not only just a map, which is a morphism. Again, I remind you that when you talk about a morphism of variety, sometimes you can identify sometimes you can identify the variety with its set of closed points. And so if I have a map here which I can show is a morphism, it's actually a morphism of the variety. Okay. And we can iterate this Frobenius map. So for any n bigger than or equal to 1, Frobenius to the n is also such a morphism. It's also a morphism. It's an endomorphism. It's also an endomorphism of A. So is, and so is 1 minus Frobenius to the n. Now, 1 minus Frobenius to the n has the advantage that it is a separable morphism, because Frobenius is 0 on the tangent space. You see, Frobenius is the map that tends x to the q. So you can think of, naively anyway, that tangent space is you take the derivative of that map locally. So it's like multiplication, it has a q in front, but q is the characteristic. So the on the tangent space is going to be 0. But 1 minus Frobenius to the n is certainly not zero, it's the identity on the tangent space. So in particular, it's separable. And so if I look at the degree, this is a separable map as Frob at 0 on the tangent space. And so the degree of this map, Frobenius to the n, is the kernel, is the size of the kernel. Remember, when you have a map, the size of the kernel, the number of points in the kernel, is equal to the degree, is equal to the separable degree in general. So if you have a separable endomorphism, then it's actually equal. So this is the size of the kernel. But if you see, what does it mean to be in the kernel of 1 minus Frobenius to the n? It means it's a set of points in here on which Frobenius to the n acts as the identity. Okay? And so what does it mean for Frobenius to the n to act as the identity? It means the point is defined over an extension of degree n. So this is the same as the number of points on A over what I might denote F sub n, where F sub n is the unique is the fixed field of Frobenius to the n. Frobenius to the n. So it is the unique extension of degree n. We can apply this theorem now, where little f is Frobenius, and we get a polynomial according to that theorem. We get a polynomial. So applying the result of last time, we get a polynomial. P sub Frobenius of t, which I would also like to call p sub a of t. So it's of course a monic polynomial here of degree 2d, where d is the dimension of the Abelian writing. And by what we just said there, you see that we see that the number of points in A over this extension of degree n is P sub A of 1. Right? Because P sub Frobenius of t is by definition the degree of n minus Frobenius. Okay, so you have a polynomial which if you evaluate it at 1, you get the number of points. Actually, I made a mistake here. We get a polynomial like this. Here, I guess this should be Frobenius. The map, the polynomial associated to Frobenius to the n. Now, what's the connection between P sub Frobenius and P sub Frobenius to the n? Well, think of it. If you have an endomorphism which has eigenvalues, say lambda, what are the eigenvalues of, when you apply that endomorphism iteratively, let's say n times, what are the eigenvalues? There'll be, you just raise the eigenvalues to that power. Right? Note that if P sub Frobenius of T is product T minus, what do they call, omega I and 2D, then P sub Frobenius to the N is product T minus omega I to the N. Now, and I can talk of eigenvalues here because of that interpretation in terms of the Tate modules, right? This, remember last time we identified that this is actually number one. The point is the endomorphism's degree is the same as the determinant of the endomorphism it induces on the Tate module, and there that's linear algebra. That's the actual characteristic polynomial. And so we can speak of eigenvalues, and then applying f to the n times it just iterates that. And you get the eigenvalues raised to the nth power. So here, what you get is P sub Frobenius n to the 1, which in terms of what I wrote there, it's product 1 minus omega I to the n. are different? No, in fact, we don't. We don't. And I'll tell you why they may not be different right now. Anyway, suppose I took A is E cross E, E an elliptic curve. In this case, P sub A of t is P sub E of t squared. So that kind of thing can happen. Yeah, okay, that's an let me see now. If A is simple and not super singular, term which I've not introduced yet, but if it, in other words, if the P rank is not zero, then this polynomial is irreducible. Okay, so the roots will be distinct. But if it's super singular, then silly thing can happen. Or another way of saying it is, if A is absolutely simple, that is, A is simple and stays simple over the algebraic closure, then P sub A of T is in fact irreducible. And the roots are distinct. Okay. Maybe I'll just make a note of that remark. If A is absolutely simple, that is, A is simple over the algebraic closure, then P sub A of T is irreducible. And in particular, the roots are distinct. You see, this business about simple over, this, by the way, is a consequence of Tate's theorem. Which tells us, basically, Tate's theorem, in words, just really says that you can read off the way A splits from the way P sub A factors. Yes. Mm-hmm. So I don't want super singular things. So I've got to exclude and maybe say dimension bigger than one. I mean, the thing is, the reason I was trying to say, at first I told you that if A is simple and not super singular, then the polynomial is irreducible. And then I realized that, look, if an abelian variety is super singular, then over the algebraic closure, it's isogenous to a power of a super singular elliptic curve. Okay, so therefore I've excluded, except the case n equals 1. So as I said, Tate's theorem basically tells you you can determine the way A factors into simple abelian varieties by the way P sub A factors as a polynomial. So it's like the abelian variety analog of Dedekind's theorem. Dedekind's theorem in number theory tells you you can determine how a prime in a number field splits by factoring the polynomial that generates the field. So this is a geometric version of that. You can determine how the abelian variety splits by factoring its characteristic polynomial of Frobenius. And the only thing where you, that's not completely true, is when you have super singular factors. Then you have to modify that statement a little bit. One more thing is here, you might as well know, is that what do I mean by A over F bar? You see, I can, if A is defined over a field, I can consider it over a bigger field. Also, A, if A is defined over F, we may consider it as a variety over, as an abelian variety over any larger field. What do you use for a larger field than F, which is not F bar? No, I can't. G is a group. What do I use for a field extension of a F? K? Okay. And then something that is simple when it's defined over F may fail to be simple over the bigger field. You see, simply, like, for example, think of a polynomial which is irreducible over Q. If I look at it over a bigger field, it may factor, right? Like T squared plus 1 is irreducible over Q, but over QI it factors. So that, you know, similarly, the, geometrically, the thing can be simple over F but factor over a bigger field. Absolutely simple means that it does, that doesn't happen. No matter how much I extend the scalars, it stays simple. Okay. Now, last time we spoke about the Rosati involution. It depended, of course, on fixing a line bundle, fix an ample line bundle L. And then we had, when you have such a thing, you have phi sub L, which is an isogeny from A to A hat. And yeah, so you have so if I have an endomorphism like this, yeah, so if this thing is an endomorphism, then we have a map going the other way, which is pullback of bundles. And so so I have this one, and then on the other hand I could go this way, apply phi L, then apply F hat, and then apply phi L inverse, phi L, then F hat, and then phi L inverse, and that gives me what we denoted F prime, which is an end A tensor Q. Phi L inverse makes sense in after I tensor with Q. Phi L is an isogeny. Remember, we marked that isogenies are invertible in once I tensor with Q. Okay, so that gives us an involution on the endomorphism algebra after I tensor with Q. And I told you the various properties of this involution. In particular, if I have an A in Q, A prime is A, and if I have any F, it is an involution. So if I apply it twice, F prime prime is F, and it's anti-commutative, so F G prime is G prime F prime, and it's linear. So if I have A F plus B G prime, like A and B are scalars, and this is AF prime plus BG prime. Okay, so now we're going to apply before I get there, I'm going to use the following key fact, important fact. Namely, that the Rosati involution gives us a positive definite, essentially positive semi-definite quadratic form on the endomorphism algebra. So in other words, the trace of that gives us such a form. Given any endomorphism F, we have the notion of trace of F, if you like, from here. I mean, you think of F as inducing a map on the Tate module, and you can take the trace of TL of F. Or another way of saying it is, look at this characteristic polynomial P sub F and take the second highest coefficient up to sine. Okay, so we have the notion of the trace. If you like, it is you can take the trace of TL of F, and it's in fact is in Q. Then the important fact is that the map X goes to trace of X X prime is a positive semi-definite quadratic form. This is a finite dimensional algebra, and so you can take a basis for it, and then so this map, it's clear what I mean when you have a quadratic form, it will be in terms of that basis, you get a quadratic form. And its eigenvalues of that quadratic form are all non-negative. That's a pretty important fact, which I'm not going to prove, but I'm going to use it. Okay, we're going to use this fact to prove the Riemann hypothesis for this field, for this polynomial. Sorry, tensor product here over Z. N day is a Z module. Sorry? I guess it's not hard to prove in the general case, but it seems to involve a few geometric concepts, intersection theory and so on. I just thought I'd avoid it. Yeah. But I don't know, maybe can be done in about a page, but assuming intersection theory. Okay, so we're going to use this, as I said, to prove. We will use this to prove the Riemann hypothesis. For P sub Frobenius. The Riemann hypothesis for P sub Frobenius is T, that is, the statement that each of these roots, omega I, has complex absolute value Q to the half. I think I already explained to you once, maybe at the beginning of the course, why it's a Riemann hypothesis. I told you the interpretation in terms of L functions. Okay, so the crucial thing is first to identify what the Rosati involution does to Frobenius. So first we should look at the effect. What is the effect of the Rosati involution on Frobenius? We have the following proposition. That if I apply Frobenius and then follow that with, well, actually either way, I'll apply Frobenius and then Frobenius followed by the image of Frobenius under Rosati, which is another endomorphism. This is still an endomorphism. Still an endomorphism. Then this thing is multiplication by Q. And the proof is really just to understand the definition. You see, Frobenius prime means I apply phi sub L and then Frobenius hat and then phi sub L inverse, and here I have Frobenius, and I want to say that's multiplication by Q. We want to show in N A tensor Q, we have the identity, this thing. So if I apply phi L to both sides, it means that in, let's see, A to A hat, in N A hat tensor Q, we have Frobenius hat phi sub L Frobenius equals Q times phi sub L. Okay, so what is the, let's just look at each side. The right hand side is Q, let's say apply at a point X, Q phi sub L of X is Q applied to the line bundle. This one here by definition is Tx star L tensor L inverse. Right, that's the definition of phi sub L. And then I'm applying multiplication by Q to that line bundle. What is multiplication by Q on line bundles? It means tensoring Q's power. So this thing here is Tx star L tensor L inverse tensor Q's power. Okay. Left hand side at a point X, it is so we have Frobenius hat phi sub L Frobenius X. So that is Frobenius hat applied to T sub Frobenius X star L tensor L inverse. Okay, so now the Frobenius what is Frobenius hat? It is the hat is just pullback of line bundles, right? So this is Frobenius star. Actually, we can bring, it's just applying Frobenius star to these things. So we can bring, Frobenius star, T star Frobenius X, L tensor Frobenius star, right, L inverse. First line, you mean the right hand side? Yeah, so I mean, what is bracket Q? It's the map which is multiplication by Q on the abelian variety, right? Yeah, that's right. And now when we've expressed it like this, it's multiplication on A hat. But what is A hat? A hat is pick knot, so it's a collection of line bundles. What is multiplication there? It's tensor power. Okay, so now we have this, and now we just want to observe that Frobenius star, T star Frobenius X, L is equal to TX star Frobenius L. And if you want to see this, you just need to compare the stalks, indeed, at any point, any y. Again, the left-hand side, the stalk at left-hand side is what? It is a Frobenius star applied to L sub y plus Frobenius x. Actually, let me not do it like this. It is, I write like this, T star Frobenius x. So I'm taking the stalk at y of this, which is the stalk at Frobenius y of this, and this is L Frobenius x plus Frobenius y. You don't need to take notes of this, this is a straightforward calculation which you can all do. And the right hand side is the stalk of this is Frobenius star L at x plus y, which is the same thing as L at Frobenius x plus Frobenius y. Actually, I just wrote this out because if you do it incorrectly, you'll get the wrong answer. So, just to tell you that you can do it, but you have to do it carefully. Okay, so now I apply this into here, and then I will get that this thing is equal to TX star Frobenius star L tensor Frobenius star. I just needed this calculation to pass the Frobenius star through the TX. Okay. But Frobenius star of a line bundle is that line bundle to the qth power. Because that's what it does on functions. It raises functions to the qth power. And so therefore you put that, therefore right hand side, or left hand side, is Tx star L, and put L inverse to the qth power. Okay, so that's just a verification. Which you can all do carefully in the privacy of your own home. Okay. So, Frobenius, when you apply the Rosati involution, has this relation. Now, here's a general proposition about any endomorphism that has that property. So, you suppose we have an endomorphism with the property that alpha prime alpha is multiplication by some integer n. Then the characteristic polynomial p sub alpha of t has roots omega 1, omega 2t with omega I equals n to the half. Moreover, if omega I is a root, if omega is a root, then so is n over omega. Clearly what we want to apply that to Frobenius, and given this proposition we will get what we want. Frobenius itself on functions is the power, is the raising to the power of q.
Is this one of these trick calculations that you can add a bunch of q's and...
It's not a trick calculation, it's just that in characteristic 0, x plus y to the q is x to the q plus y to the q. So if I want to see what it does on functions, which function has the property that its value is the qth power at any point, it's the qth power map. No, 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 look, on points, it's raising the coordinates of a point, a closed point, right. It's raising the coordinates to the qth power, okay? So now let's say this point is the root of some polynomial equation. So which polynomial equation will have the property that its roots are the qth powers of the roots of, not the qth powers, but say you have a polynomial, give me another polynomial such that its roots are obtained from the roots of the previous one by raising the coordinates to the qth power. If the characteristic is q, then the polynomial is f to the q. So on the structure sheaf, it raises functions to the qth power. And the implication of that is that on line bundles, it tensors it to the qth power. Okay? Actually, none of these are dumb questions, because at the point is some of this is actually basic kind of calculations, but in a new language. It's set in a new language, and so often you spend time trying to navigate through that language. Okay, so we want to prove this proposition. And as I said, I'm going to use this basic fact that the trace is a positive semi-definite form. Okay, so firstly, we may suppose that A is simple. If it's not, I will reduce to that. If it's not, you see, you can show fairly easily that the alpha itself factors into a bunch of endomorphisms of the simple pieces, and the p will also factor. Okay, so let me put a star behind this, meaning it's not. Just give it a little bit of thought. But it's enough to show it when A is simple. Okay, so in this case, and actually this assumption even is not essential. The argument will more or less work, but I just want a simplification to occur a little later on. So in this case, the endomorphism algebra is a division algebra. is a division algebra. Do I give it a name? No. Okay. Okay, so now choose, let alpha be, notice by the way the hypothesis is not that this holds for every alpha. Just suppose I have an endomorphism with this property that alpha prime alpha is multiplication by an n. And I'm now trying to prove Riemann hypothesis for that alpha. Okay. So with alpha as above, let Q of t be the minimal polynomial of alpha. So it's a finite dimensional algebra. Alpha is integral, we know that. It satisfies the polynomial. And I want the minimal polynomial, that is the polynomial of smallest degree that alpha is the root of. So Q will be some polynomial. I don't care, it has rational coefficients. Now, P sub alpha of t, P sub alpha of alpha is 0. That was one of the properties when we constructed this P sub alpha. So what that means is that, and so Q has to divide P sub alpha. Okay, because Q is the minimal polynomial. Okay. Okay, now we also know that P is the characteristic polynomial of T sub L of alpha on the Tate module, right? The same. So if I have an eigenvalue, if omega, even QL bar, is a root of I want to say eigenvalue. Is an eigenvalue where L is different from characteristic of F. Is an eigenvalue of this thing. Then Q evaluated on that omega is an eigenvalue of TL of Q of alpha. So Q is a polynomial with rational coefficients. You can think of it as having Z coefficients. Clear the denominator, it has Z coefficients. And it divides this P sub alpha. But I can take an alpha and apply Q to it, I still get some endomorphism. So it induces an endomorphism of the Tate module. So TL of Q of alpha makes sense. But Q is the minimal polynomial of alpha, so of course Q of alpha is 0. So this is 0. That means Q of omega is 0. Now, what are these omegas? Which omegas are eigenvalues of T of alpha? They're the zeros of P sub alpha. So every zero of P sub alpha is a zero of Q. Here we said Q divides P sub alpha. Now I'm saying that every zero of P sub alpha is a zero of Q. So every root of P sub alpha is the root of Q. No, I started with a root of T sub alpha, and I showed that Q vanishes there. Okay, so certainly there we already showed every root of Q is a root of T sub alpha, but the point is they have the same set of roots, but Q is irreducible. That's where I'm using that A is simple. And therefore, the only way this can happen is that P sub alpha has to in fact divide some power of Q. In fact, I mean more than that, P sub alpha has to be Q to the M for some M. Because Q is irreducible. Because I'm assuming A is simple. Okay, so now consider the subalgebra Q bracket alpha of n A tensor Q. It's got to be a field. Yeah. So this is a field. You see, firstly, it is commutative and simple. So it's got to be a field. N A is a division algebra. This is a commutative field. Let's call it K. Then we also see that then 1 over alpha of course is in K, and A over alpha, what do we call it, A, what did I use there, N over alpha in K. So this means that therefore K is preserved by the Rosati involution. Okay, so you have a subfield of this division algebra which is preserved by the Rosati involution. So either the involution is trivial on K or it's not. Either the involution is trivial on K. Is trivial or not. Trivial meaning it's the identity. Could be the identity. Or it may not be. So if it's not trivial, then we may consider K0, which is Q adjoint alpha plus alpha prime. Okay, then the involution is trivial on this. Trivial means the identity. Is the identity on K0. And moreover, we see that moreover, the K0 is a subfield of index 2. Because any element of K, well, firstly, I need to only show alpha satisfies a quadratic polynomial over K0. Why? Because alpha plus alpha prime is here, and alpha times alpha prime is in Q. So alpha satisfies a quadratic polynomial over K0. So this is an extension field of degree 2. Okay. Now this field K0 in fact has to be totally real. This is where we use the positivity of this trace map. See, because the trace on K0, we have a trace of x squared is bigger than or equal to 0. Right? Because the involution is trivial on K0. So it's trace of x prime is trace of x squared is bigger than or equal to 0. And so that means that is that this. What does this mean? This means that that is trace x squared is a positive semi-definite form, quadratic form on K0, and therefore also on K0 tensor R. Okay, so the eigen, the matrix is already given to you over K0, and the eigenvalues are non-negative, so the form, the matrix doesn't change when I extend scalars. But now K0 tensor R is a product of the completions of K at infinite prime, so you will have some R's and some C's. And the trace, this map, is simply going to go over to, note that, K0 tensor R is a number of copies of R and a number of copies of C. And moreover, the trace map, trace x squared, goes to, when I look at the embedding of K0 into any component, goes to trace of sigma of x squared in the usual sense, where sigma is an embedding of K0 to R or C. So the only way you're going to have this thing, this condition satisfied, is if all the all of these factors are real. If you have any C factor there, then mapping, you know, taking that one where, let's say, you have only a component here and ones everywhere else, and choosing that component to, let's say, to be I, will show you that the trace will not be non-negative. Okay? Right? So this condition, therefore, forces K0 to be totally real. In other words, all Archimedean embeddings are into the real numbers. And then this K, which is a quadratic extension, cannot be just any old quadratic extension. It has to be totally complex. K is totally complex. That means that every embedding, every Archimedean embedding of K is into C. It has no real embeddings. that is, K has no real embeddings. And the way you see this is, firstly, you know K is a quadratic extension, indeed. K is K0, a joint square root of something. It's a quadratic extension. Every quadratic extension is obtained in that way. And what does this involution do to gamma? Well, it doesn't do anything to gamma, because gamma is in K0, and K0 is fixed by the involution. But on the other hand, this is root gamma squared, right? And it's a commutative field, so this is the same thing as root gamma prime squared, and because the involution is actually anti-commutative, but in this case it's just the same. So that tells you that root gamma prime has to be plus or minus square root gamma. So there's not too much choice for what root gamma can go to under the involution. Now, if it goes to plus root gamma, then again the involution is trivial on K, but we're under the assumption that it's not trivial. Okay, we'll come back to handle the other one in a minute. So it's got to be root gamma prime has to be minus root gamma. And again, you make the same argument with this now, that trace x prime positive on K tensor R forces K to be totally complex. Okay, so it's very similar to the argument I just made there. Okay, that was all under the assumption that it's not trivial on K. What happens if it's trivial on K? Well, this argument will show you that in that case, K is totally real. Okay, so in either case, either K is totally real or is totally complex. And in the latter case, there's a subfield of index 2. The totally real subfield is the field on which the involution acts as the identity. Okay. It's not exactly. Firstly, the Rosati doesn't act on points; it acts on endomorphisms. Right? And secondly, it doesn't even act purely on endomorphisms. It's the endomorphisms up to isogeny. About the map from A to A hat?
Yes.
Yes. No, because A hat is not necessarily isomorphic to A. A hat is only isogenous to A. So, I mean, okay, we can think of the case, let's say, where let's say it's principally polarized, so that A hat is isomorphic to A. And then your question is the polarization, the map tends point to minus of itself? And I would say the answer is probably not. Let's see, actually let's see, where does this map come from? It's if the map by definition is the map that takes a line bundle, translates it by a point, and then tensors with the inverse, right? So let's say you have an elliptic curve. Yeah? So then you already have I think on an elliptic curve it would actually be the identity, not the inverse map. Yeah. Okay, so where are we now? We have that this field is totally real or totally complex. So now this follows because, therefore, if the roots of this polynomial Q, which we wrote down, which are the same as the roots of P sub alpha of T, the roots of Q are sigma of alpha, where sigma ranges over the embeddings of K into C or R. But sigma of alpha prime goes to sigma of alpha complex conjugate. See, in every embedding, the point is, I already told you that when you have this quadratic extension in the involution, doesn't have too much choice what it can do. It has to be basically this kind of calculation shows you it basically has to be complex conjugation, because it's trivial on the real subfield. And so on every embedding, alpha prime gets sent to the complex conjugate of the image of alpha. But then if you have that, you see you have n, which is alpha alpha prime, and that's what it will go to in every embedding. And this is sigma of alpha, then sigma of alpha prime, and so this is sigma of alpha squared. But alpha, of course, is an endomorphism, but in these maps, you see, I restricted myself to the field generated by alpha, and those embeddings, it's going to send alpha to the roots, to the various roots of the polynomial of alpha. So this is telling you that all of those roots have exactly the property we're looking for. Okay? Note that. Yeah, I already said it here. Alpha under these embeddings goes to the roots of the characteristic of its minimal polynomial. So all of the roots satisfy this thing. So therefore you get this, and then this fact, if omega is a root and so is n over omega, follows because let's see, why does it follow? If omega is a root, well, P sub alpha has, yeah, because n over omega is omega bar, and P is a polynomial with coefficients in Q. So if omega is a root, so is omega bar. So therefore, n over omega is a root, and then you can show that this has a in fact, this is a permutation of the roots. Okay, so that's how you prove this theorem. Now the implications are quite far-reaching. A line bundle. Right. Yeah. Right. That's right. So we should fix it. And so implicit in the statement of this proposition, or wherever Rosati is used, implicit is fix a polarization, fix a line, ample line bundle. You can change, yeah. Right. You see, you're not allowed to fix the identity map. All you're allowed to do is fix the line bundle, and then you're given the map. You mean to take the structure shift?
Yeah.
But that may not be ample. You need it to be ample. Otherwise, you don't get an isogeny. That's the point, yeah. Okay. So, the implication of this is many-fold, but right now, implication. It's another strange thing about modern mathematics. We ascribe names to things when you ascribe names of people to things, those people would be surprised if they were informed. It's a Riemann hypothesis. It tells you in particular that if I look at the number of points on A over this extension of q to the n of degree n, so F sub n is a field of q to the n elements, then according to this thing, it's a product of 1 minus omega I to the n, by what we wrote before. And now if you start multiplying this out and see how big this is, the top term is going to come from the product of the omega i's. So each of those has absolute value root q. So this thing is going to give you a q to the d as the main term. You get by multiplying the omega i's. Each one has absolute value root q, but omega I and omega I bar both appear there. So you get an actual q. They get paired, and so you'll get d of them, get q to the d. And then the rest is, if you want to write as an error term, which depends on n, you're going to, I'm sorry, this is q to the nd. Is that why you were looking puzzled? I can tell when Masroor isn't happy. Q to the nd, because omega I to the n has absolute value q to the n. Then this thing is q to the n over 2 times 2d minus 1, which is d minus a half. Because this error term comes from any other terms. When you expand this out and you multiply it out, it'll have fewer than 2d of the omega i's, at most 2d minus 1, let's say. And each of them have absolute value n over 2. So it's n over 2 times 2d minus 1. So that's what you get as the error term. And that's the number of points. So in particular, at level 1, a of f is q to the d plus o of q to the d minus a half. And let's say the abelian variety was presented to you in a way, in some explicit way. Maybe by some method you have the equations of A, or some other method, and now you want to count these points. So if we were presented A and its group law in an explicit form, then we could use this. We could solve the discrete log problem on A of F in time O of q to the d over 2. That's a vague statement, but it gives you sort of rough idea of what the level of security of the system is. So let's say you developed a crypto system where you're using the group A of F as the basis of your public key, private key pair. It's a group of size roughly q to the d. That's what we've discovered here. And if you don't know anything more about the group, on a group of n elements, if I give you the discrete log problem to solve, it'll take you roughly root n steps. And the idea of doing this kind of thing is more generally, if you have any group, G is any group explicitly given group of n elements, and let's say you have and H equals G to the X, okay, and we have elements G and H in G, with H equals G to the X, how do we determine X? So the generic algorithm is the square root method. So you would write, let's say, the order n, let's take square root of n, and let's call that m. So m is the integer part of square root of n. Okay? Then this x that we're looking for, x satisfies, of course, 0 less than or equal to x less than n. So we can write, x is what we're trying to find out. It's some number between n, so we may write x, we can divide x by m, so we can write it as a plus bm, or maybe better, am plus b, where a and b are between 0 and m. Right? Of course, any number up to n can be written in that form. And then our problem that h equals gx is h equals g to the am plus b, so that means h times g to the minus b is g to the m to the a. So what you do is you prepare a table. You see, on both each side you have about m elements to compute. So compute the m elements h times g to the minus b, where b goes from 0 to m, and the m elements g to the m a. G to the m you compute once. Okay, g to the m you compute it once and keep it. So at some point, now you start computing powers of it. There are m powers of it that you need to compute. So you have two tables of m elements each, and you try to look for coincidences. Look for a coincidence. So when you do find it, then you find the b and the a. Now what's involved in this really? Well, what's involved is these computations. You have to compute these m elements and these m elements, but this computations add. So if m plus m, that is 2m elements to compute, not m times m. Secondly, you have to worry about storage. All of these points have to be stored somewhere, so that's something too that we'll ignore. But if these numbers are large, that's a big deal. So you have to store this much information somewhere. And then you need to find a coincidence. This part is fast. You can quickly find where two lists coincide in polynomial time. The storage is non-trivial and the computation is non-trivial. But assuming that the computation is one unit of time, whatever that unit is, and assuming storage is also not an issue, then you see that the number of computations you need is roughly m, which is square root of n. So you can compute in square root of the size of the group order. You can solve the discrete log problem without, if you don't have any other information, you can solve the discrete log problem in roughly square root of the size of the group order. That's not polynomial time. So that's exponential time. Now another important point is that what I put in brackets, namely explicitly given. The discrete log problem is not a group theory problem. It's a problem in computation. The same group presented differently can significantly change the discrete log problem. So an example of this is if you look at the cyclic group of p elements, G is Z mod PZ, P is a prime, and I'm trying to solve a discrete log problem. Discrete log problem here means what? If I give you G and H, in G, find X so that H is congruent to GX mod P, kind of. This is the abuse of notation. As long as nobody complains, I'll use it. This is basically what I'm asking. I say it's abuse of notation because mod P is used when you're dealing with integers. These are not integers, they're elements in here. That's the discrete log problem here, but you can solve this using what? I have to find X such that H is GX. In other words, I have to invert G. I have to find the inverse of G. Vijay is going to help. Pardon? Very good. I was waiting to hear that answer. Using the Aryabhatta algorithm. So it's basically using the Euclidean algorithm backwards. And it's an important, very important point to state this because the crypto community calls this the extended Euclidean algorithm. But the insight to understand that there's a computational gain by running the algorithm backwards is actually a big insight, and it doesn't appear in Euclid, whereas it does appear explicitly in the work of Aryabhatta. So anyway, you use that algorithm and you can compute this. This is polynomial time, it's fast. Okay, polynomial time. But if I give you the same problem, let's say I give you a problem like let's take a prime P such that P minus 1, let's take a prime Q such that Q minus 1 is twice a prime. Okay? And now I ask you in this, let's say even mod plus minus 1. Okay? So this has the same order. This is a group of the same order and it has P elements. Solve the discrete log problem here. Okay, so here I'm given G and H in this group, and I've got to find X so that H equals G to the X up to sine, let's say. And suddenly this becomes a hard problem. It's isomorphic to Z mod P, but that's useless from a computational point of view, because this isomorphism is the discrete log. This isomorphism is abstract. So if I can find a way to get from here to here explicitly, I'm happy, because here I know how to solve it in polynomial time. But the whole problem is getting from here to here, namely making this thing explicit. But what is that map? You see, it is the discrete log. I mean, the point is, if I have a point G to the X, how do I identify it with the Z mod P? It, as an additive group, it's the X. You see, it's G to the X is going to X. So it is the map, this isomorphism is the discrete log. So therefore, what I'm trying to point out to you by this example is the discrete log is not a problem in group theory. It depends on how are you presented the group? How did somebody represent the elements of the group to you? How did somebody represent the operation in the group to you? All of those things significantly affect whether the discrete log problem is hard or easy. Okay, so now, having said that, we're in quite a difficult situation with A because it's hard to present it in any sort of explicit form. But still, we can talk in general about what we'll see how much we can say in general about the discrete log in spite of that limitation. The next topic then is going to be about Newton polygons. I want to say something about the Newton polygon of this characteristic polynomial of Frobenius that we now have within polynomials with integer coefficients, and connect and then study the what impact certain shapes of the Newton polygon have on the discrete log problem. Okay, and for that we'll need pairing, so I'll have to review the explicit definition of the pairing, two pairings for abelian varieties. Okay, I think I'll stop there for today. We have a class on Wednesday, I believe Wednesday morning. Is that right? Wednesday. I didn't check today. I think it's Wednesday morning. Check the web for sure, but it's Wednesday morning. Yes. Well, actually, I mean, yeah, I guess so. With fiber functor is H1. Yeah, the representation is okay. So actually, it depends on the choice of fiber functor. So if you're taking just singular H1, then let me see now. The group should be what is the group? The Tanakian category of abelian varieties with fiber functor singular. Actually, the answer that's more obvious is if the fiber functor is Durham cohomology, and then the group is then the group. Pardon? So he wants to know the Tanakian group corresponding to the category of abelian varieties where the fiber functor is a specific thing, either singular H1 or Durham. So let me just think now. What is? I think with Durham, it would be probably the Mumford-Tate group of the abelian variety. But I'm not quite sure, because the Mumford-Tate group has to capture information about the Hodge structure. Durham doesn't. You need to complexify. It's Durham plus something, right? So it's a good question. It can be answered with some thought. I just don't have it off my head, right?